If you ask my mother where she's from, she's 100% going to say she's from the Kingdom of God, because she does not like to say that she's from Ecuador. Ecuador being one of the few South American countries that has not especially outdone itself on the international stage. Magical realism basically skipped over it, as did the military dictatorship craze of the 1970s and 1980s. Plus, there are no world-famous Ecuadorians to speak of, other than the fool who housed Julian Assange at the embassy in London, the president, and Christina Aguilera's father, who is a domestic abuser. If you ask my father where he is from, he will definitely say Ecuador, because he is sentimental about the country for reasons he's working out in therapy. But if you push them, I mean really push them, they're both going to say they're from New York. If you ask them if they feel American because you're a little narc who wants to prove your blood runs red, white, and blue, they're going to say no, we feel like New Yorkers. We really do, too. My family has lived in Brooklyn and Queens a combined 97 years. My dad drove a cab back when East New York was still gang country, and he had to fold his body into a little origami swan and hide under his steering wheel during crossfires in the middle of the day while he ate a jumbo slice of pizza. Times have changed, but my parents haven't. My dad sees struggling bodegas and he says they're fronts. For what? Money laundering. For whom? The mob. My mother wants my brother and me to wear pastels all year round to avoid being seen as taking sides in the little tiff between the Bloods and the Crips. My parents are New Yorkers to the core. Despite how close we are, we've talked very little about their first days in New York or about their decision to choose New York, or even the United States as a destination. It's not that I haven't asked my parents why they came to the United States. It's that the answer isn't as morally satisfying as most people's answers are. A decapitated family member, famine, and I never press them for more details because I don't want to apply pressure on a bruise. The story, as far as I know it, goes something like this. My parents had just gotten married in Cotopaxi, Ecuador, and their small auto body business was not doing well. Then my dad got into a car crash where he broke his jaw, and they had to borrow money from my father's family, who are bad, greedy people. The idea of coming to America to work for a year to make just enough money to pay off the debt came up, and it seemed like a good idea. My father's family asked to keep me, 18 months old at the time, as collateral. And that's what my parents did. That's about as much as I know. You may be wondering why my parents agreed to leave me as an economic assurance, but the truth is, I have not had this conversation with them. I've never thought about it enough to ask. The whole truth is that if I was a young mother, if I was me as a young mother, unparented, ambitious, at my sexual prime, I think I would be thrilled to leave my child for exactly a year, as they said it would be, which is what the plan was. I never had to forgive my mom. My dad was my earliest memory. He was dressed in a powder blue sweater. He was walking into a big airplane. I looked out from a window and my dad was walking away, and in my hand, I carried a Ziploc bag full of coins. I don't know. It's been almost 30 years. It doesn't matter anymore. My parents didn't come back after a year. They didn't stay in America because they were making so much money that they became greedy. They were barely making ends meet. Years passed. When I was 4 years old, going to school in Ecuador, teachers began to comment on how gifted I was. My parents knew Ecuador was not the place for a gifted girl, that gender politics were too fucked up, and they wanted me to have all the educational opportunities they hadn't had. So that's when they brought me to New York to enroll me in Catholic school. But no matter how hard they both worked to make tuition, they fell short. Then one day, I think I was in the fourth grade, the school bursar called me into his office and explained that there was an elderly billionaire-ess who lived in upstate New York who had heard about me and was impressed. He told her my family was poor and might have to pull me from the school. Okay, so in this scenario, the tragedy would have been that I'd have to go to the local public school, which was not a great school, but just so we're on the same page, I support public schools and I would have been fine. So she came up with a proposition. She'd pay for most of my tuition if I kept up my grades and wrote her letters. That was the first time in my life I'd have a benefactor, but it would not be my last. When I was at Harvard, a very successful Wall Street man who knew me from an educational NGO we both belonged to, he as a supporter, me as a supported, learned I was undocumented and could not legally hold a work-study job, so every semester he wrote me a modest check. In the notes section, he cheekily wrote, "beer money," the joke being that I wouldn't really drink until I was 21, but every semester I used it for books, winter coats for those fucking Boston winters, money I couldn't ask my parents for because they didn't have any to give. I wrote him regular emails about my life at Harvard and my budding success as a published writer. He was always appropriate and boundaried. I had read obsessively about artists since I was a kid and considered myself an artist since I was a kid, so I didn't feel weird about older, wealthy white people giving me money in exchange for grades or writing. It was patronage. They were Gertrude Stein and I was a young Hemingway. I was Van Gogh, crazy and broken. I truly did not have any racial anxieties about this, thank God. That kind of thing could really fuck a kid up.